This podcast is brought to you by On Track Studio.
This podcast addresses various mental health challenges, including topics such as suicide, addiction, eating disorders, depression, and anxiety. These discussions may be triggering for some individuals. If you or someone you know is struggling, please seek support from a mental health professional or a trusted individual in your life. Remember, you are not alone and help is available. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to Mind Your Head. This week, joining me in the studio is James Beatty, co-founder of Rebuild Health and Fitness. In this episode, we speak all things mindset, training. We even dive a little bit into his own recent mental health struggles. It was a really fascinating conversation and can't wait for you to hear it. Well, welcome to Mind Your Head. You're a bit of a veteran in the podcast world. Is that correct?
I know about veteran. I've recorded a few.
You recorded, what, 200 plus?
Yeah, mate. Oh, yeah. Probably. Well, I don't know.
What's it like being on the other side?
Different.
Is it?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different, purely because you're answering, you know, when you're the interviewer, you're just reading them questions and hopefully people waffle good stuff up.
Yeah.
And then it's on what the other person says to make it a good podcast.
Yeah, I feel the same.
Great. Great. But it's like, I don't mind it.
I don't like it being on the other end. I've done one being a guest, and I thought it would be a breeze. I wouldn't have to do any prep for it. I panicked.
I think it comes down. I remember the first few I were on like years ago. Mm. Oh God, they were so bad, man. Like, I don't know if I was trying to make myself sound smarter than what I am. I had like a list of like 10 smart words to get into a conversation. You know what I mean?
And I didn't use any of them.
I was just like, fuck, is this what it's going to be like?
It's probably better off just being me, I think.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, this is your podcast. Like mine is mine. Like when we got the producer and was like, can you try not swearing? I'm like, no, fucking definitely. No, definitely. No.
This is free reign.
Definitely not.
You can say whatever you want.
Good, because I struggle.
I do.
Yeah. Struggle around everyone.
Well, I tried to sort of make it a little bit more PG or make it a little bit more family friendly.
Mm.
But I was trying too hard. So I was like, fuck this.
Yeah.
I'll talk how I talk to normal, to my friends, to people, how I have conversations. And I think it will flow a lot easier and be a bit more natural rather than.
Yeah. The majority of people don't mind. It's just when you get messages saying, hey, I was listening, it'd be great if I could listen to it with my kids in the car. That's your problem. You chose to have them.
You're the parent.
Yeah, that's it. My kids are so, like, I listen to, like, a lot of country music, for example. So in my car, it's, like, quite cruisy. But my missus, Jesus Christ.
What family?
I think she's from Detroit. Honestly. So it's just the language in there. It's, like, horrendous. And my kids are in the back singing. I'm like, just turn this off.
I would never have thought that.
Honestly.
Really?
Like, horrendous. If you're white, she does not want to hear from you.
Well, I was going to say Eminem, but it's not Eminem.
It's maybe some Eminem, he probably doesn't. He probably doesn't pass the quota. She like listens to like all sorts. Yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot of topics that I want to cover with you today, and I'm really interested with your overall mindset when it comes to exercise and I guess your approach to training and your philosophy around training when it comes to rebuild health and fitness. But I think the best place for us to start today, and something that I actually don't know about you, is your upbringing back in Wales.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like?
Wonderful.
Was it?
Yeah, man. Where I'm, like I'm from a small town in Wales, but Abergele, what a place. But fine, like perfect upbringing.
Mm.
Wonderful parents, wonderful place to grow up. You know, I've had people talk to me in the past or even in therapy where they're like, let's go into your childhood.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. Like, you're not gonna,
yeah.
Like, you know, my parents did everything. Didn't have heaps, to be honest, but my parents did everything for us. You'll never know that we didn't. Like, I grew up on the coast, so there was a beach. And I say beach, it was full of pebbles, but it was water related.
Oh, a beach in Wales.
Yeah, there was sea. There was sea there. But then behind us was a mountain and we had a castle.
Mm.
So and they were probably like 200 meters away. Like, pretty
amazing. How cool is that?
Yeah, pretty amazing place to sort of grow up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was it. It was just filled with sport.
Yeah. Was rugby always
rugby and football
around?
Rugby and football.
Yeah.
I played everything, cricket, whatever it was, but it was quite funny.
Cricket in Wales.
What do you think it is? Like when I moved to Australia, I was like, where are you from? I was like, Wales. They were like, what music do they have there? Where do you think
I just thought cricket is such like a unique sport home to like.
Of course you play cricket. England are classic cricket.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I guess. I didn't know Wales' national sport's rugby though.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I think football's getting a bit bigger.
It's is it?
Yeah. But yeah. Rugby was big. So, yeah, I played both up until... And then at 16, you have to choose because they end up being on the same day.
Oh, right.
So I was quite good at rugby. I thought I was quite good at football too, to be honest. But then my last year, I started getting like dropped and I was on the bench like a lot.
So this doesn't make sense.
I was like, what? I've been scoring 5 goals a year. Like, why are you benching me? So at the end of the year, I was like, oh, maybe it's time. But you know what the worst thing was?
What?
Do you know who the coach was for the football team?
Who?
My dad.
Oh, well, that's that bias thing, isn't it?
My dad, your producer laughing over there. My dad was the coach for that. But he was also my coach in rugby, so maybe he just wanted me to choose.
Yeah, to choose. Maybe he's just like, get rid of this football, go to rugby.
Honestly,
he wasn't dropping you playing rugby, though, was he?
No,
we'll see.
But there was times I wouldn't get any minutes. I'd be like, do you mind, Dad?
It's a bit awkward at home, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Yeah, so that's where it was. And then, yeah, chose from rugby, went to a sports college.
Yeah.
Everything, even like my studies, everything's been to do with health and performance.
Oh, has it?
Stuff. Yeah, yeah.
At a young age, has it?
Yeah. It was the only thing I really cared about or were willing to put in effort with. I always liked, I loved school, but I didn't like the academic side of school. I just love good. To me, it's like you go to school, you hang around with 30 of your best mates all day. I was like, this is the social side of it. Brilliant.
Yeah.
And then college and then university in Cardiff.
Yeah.
And then Australia.
Do you have a memorable moment from your childhood? Something that stands out?
Memorable.
Probably not getting dropped from playing football, but...
No. I don't know. My whole childhood was good. You know, what a place to sort of grow up that it was.
You would have been a bit of a cheeky kid growing up.
Yeah, big time.
Did you get in trouble a lot? Did you?
Yeah, yeah. Cheeky would be the word, cheeky. I think. Like, all my reports said the same. Like, has a lot of potential, but...
Has trouble concentrating. Oh, yeah, that was my report.
Yeah. I was terrible, man. Like, I was such a sore loser and stuff growing up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was me too.
Gracious in victory, but like bad loser.
I was filthy loser.
Yeah. And then my kid now, like, if he loses, he goes mental. I'm like, where'd you get this from?
that's my fear. Yeah. My kid's going to be exactly like me, and then my mum and dad are going to be like,
yeah, it is a bit like that.
Yeah.
But every bad trait he has, I say this is from your side of the family. It's not from my side of the family.
What was your ambition at that age? Did you have a goal or a dream? I know you said you were sort of into your fitness studies and that sort of thing. What was your...
No, it's a really sort of boring story.
Was it?
Yeah. Not really. Same as everyone else, when you play sport, you sort of want to play footy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what you wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Went to uni and that's when we played. That was like... that a pretty high level. Like we won the league, I think we came second in our first year, and then we won the league in the British comp in the second year. And that was just the best time to play sports. You always have that small aspiration of like
going professional,
a little bit. But I let myself down, like from an ego perspective. I drank fairly heavily because again a lot of the boys started getting picked up, and then like I remember just drinking and stuff fairly heavily as well. So then when I didn't make it, because I knew that I wouldn't make it, then I had an excuse of why I never made it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so bad, really. Thinking back, I'm like, what an idiot. But
I fucked it for myself.
No,
I know exactly what you mean.
And then come out to Australia for a year after it, just for a year, and then 12 years later.
So is that what it was? Is that you came out for a gap year?
Just come out for a year, yeah.
By yourself.
Play a bit of sport, do whatever, yeah. No, I came out with Jess.
Oh, so Jess is
Jess from, is Welsh, yeah.
Oh, Jess is Welsh.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you met her.
No. I keep it 100%.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So you both decided to come out and travel for a year?
Just for a year, yeah. Her parents lived here. So when she started uni, her parents moved here, left her, stranded in the UK.
Yeah.
And then we're like, let's just go out for a year, see what happens.
Yeah.
Bob, your uncle. Here we go.
never went back.
Now I wouldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I just wouldn't. This is what a place, like Australia.
It's the best.
Oh, honestly.
What was the transition like for you at the start? Was it?
Fine, yeah.
It was the best. Oh, what was it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, waking up, it's sunny. Oh.
No culture shock or anything?
No, this is the worst. You know, everyone's happy.
That's so good.
Everyone's happy. Ugh, disgusting.
So how did, like, I know moving to a new country can be a little bit scary. I know you're with Jess and stuff, and you sound like someone that can make friends pretty quickly. Is that what it was like when you moved to Australia?
Yeah, hopefully. I think once you start like working or you start doing something or you start playing sport, like I feel quite comfortable just chatting to people and getting along. You know, I can change my personality to sort of fit what I need to do at that point. So I've never found it difficult to sort of make friends. I've never felt alone necessarily, you know, like moving out here. So I found it quite comfortable. And obviously having Jess's parents here was a huge help. It would have been a very different story if we had to come and live in backpackers. So we had sort of a quite privileged way.
Yeah.
Privileged way in at the beginning, but comfortable.
So how did you make your way to East? Because that's how we met at East Rugby Club.
Yeah, so I was supposed to play straight away. And then I think I broke my leg.
Did you?
Yeah. Look.
It might have been before I got there. Oh, it's bad.
Yeah, like 18.
Down the middle.
18 pins. I was on crutches for like 7 months.
So where did you do that?
Sydney.
Did you?
Yeah, I jumped off Coogee Bay Hotel roof when I was young and drunk.
You jumped off the Coogee roof?
Yeah, you seen it? It's high.
Yeah, I know how high it is.
My mate jumped off it and like...
What were you thinking was going to happen?
Well, he jumped off like he'd been doing parkour for
20 and embraced his landing, did a roll and everything. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, got it.
What is this? Just stiff leg.
Down to the floor.
Just it didn't, like, it didn't come through the skin or anything, did it?
No, but it's like snapped up my tibia like halfway. Like I was in hospital for a week. Went down there for New Year's Eve, the day before New Year's Eve. Did it that day and got to hospital like 7 days later.
Jess would have been like...
Jess had to drive back on her own because I wasn't allowed to get in the car.
You piece of shit.
I was 21. So then when that sort of recovered, that's when I started trying to play again.
Mm.
And then I couldn't straight away. And then I got pretty fit. Like after that, I found sort of CrossFit after I broke my leg.
Yep.
And that's when I got real fit. Working like big ranges of motion that I wasn't necessarily used to. Because a lot of rugby related stuff is, it's just quite tight. There's not through a range. It's all about like power. Like range of motion isn't really a thought about thing. Technique's not really a thought about thing. It's just shifting tin. Or it was sort of back then.
Yeah.
So I found sort of CrossFit and fell in love with that. And I remember coming to that 2015, 2014 preseason at East. And I remember just being fit. Like fit.
Yeah.
Pretty
strong. But that was my first my first season too. Yeah.
Fit and just strong and I was just like pfft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Here we
I've got the first half position now.
Yeah. No, that was Chucky.
wasn't it?
Yeah. I wasn't moving anyone at that point.
So how did you find East? Did you enjoy that time there? I know you've still got really close friends from that club.
Yeah, I loved it. We're looking just next weekend, a little bit different. Did you come to that camp where we went over the mountains with that big pole? 2015?
No.
But there's a picture of me, Milo, Lloydo, McKinnon and Aidan Kelly.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the first weekend I'd met them.
Yeah.
Oh, and I'm still really good mates with them all.
Yeah, that's
now.
So good.
So, yeah, I mean, I loved it. I think it changed my trajectory in Australia. Like, I don't really know what I would do, you know, if I didn't join them. You know, it could change. And then, like, one step in a different direction can change like the course of your life. And I think joining East was part of that. I mean, it was a big 2015 though. Yeah. Like one of the best years of my life, but not one I'd want to repeat at any time either. You feel that?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Like, the memories are good.
Amazing, right?
Do you have any favorite memories that we can share on the podcast?
I know you said you can swear, but I don't know. Like,
nah, even not.
Yeah.
But we might incriminate ourselves.
It was just every week, you know? Every week.
Yeah.
And it was just a lot of fun. You were playing footy and then you would just rip in.
I think it was the most fun I've had during a rugby season. I think all the rugby seasons that I've had have been quite serious and I've taken it quite serious. But East was very serious when you were training and playing, but I never had that outlet of like actually enjoying the rugby experience before. Mm. All the other times I've just gone like, oh, I just want to like, go home, sleep, train, play, go. And I didn't really like immerse myself too much in the past sort of clubs in that social side of rugby clubs before. And people have told me how important it is and the friends that you make. And before I got to East, like obviously the rugby was like high level, but before I got to East, people were like, it's one of the best social clubs in Brisbane. And I was thinking, oh, fuck, how's this going to like go? Because I don't really get around it too much.
You were fine.
Yeah. But I loved it. Like I've still got like same with you. I've still got such good friends from that club, and that and all those seasons there were, especially 2015 was such a good time.
Yeah, I think once you've been in the trenches with people, you know, on the field or even out of the field, and
even the trenches out of the,
you know, and you know the depths of someone.
Yeah.
You connect a lot deeper
and quickly too. Like I think the first week I was there, it was like training, game.
Yep.
Piss up at the end, social, and then the next week it was like everyone's first name basis or nicknames, or it was just like comfortable straight. I've never fit in so easily into a rugby team before.
I think it was that's what happens at university, especially in the UK. Australia's a little bit different from a university standard because you usually live at home, where universities like America and the UK, like everyone lives on campus. So
the colleges and
you
stuff,
just become friends very fast. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like very quickly. Yeah. But again, there's nothing.
There's a lot of bonding time.
A lot of bonding. Yeah. A lot of bonding, yeah. And it's great. But again, like one of my things I'll talk about a little bit later is that fact that I think you can have that balance too. You can be fit, you can be strong, you can be healthy-minded and still have a good social life and still eat food and still drink. Like you can do it all, where I think we tend to live in a society where it's like all or nothing for periods of time.
It's like those two ends of the extreme. It's either all this or all that.
Yeah, and it doesn't really need to be.
No, no. But we will touch on that. But you mentioned earlier that you got your injury and you got really into the CrossFit. When did the idea come about that you wanted to buy a CrossFit gym and sort of get into that competitive fitness industry?
Well, it didn't really. So injury came. I was a PT at the time, just a PT. QUT, like at university. And then the CrossFit gym just opened up down the road. So I was like, oh, I'll just give that a go. But I was just PTing. And then I sort of went through, you know, your PT, and then you're sort of a fitness manager. And then like I ended up like this regional manager for the chain. So I went sort of corporate. And that time I met Sean Carroll, my business partner. Met him at a competition first, and then went and trained at his gym, which was CrossFit 4178.
You did a CrossFit competition?
Against each other.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, nice.
There's a picture of us two together where we didn't know each other or didn't talk to each other. Yeah. They were just in the same picture, which I think is quite
that's,
cool.
That's sick.
Yeah, it's quite cool. And then went to train at his gym, which was CrossFit 4178. And then he was at East as well. Mm. So, and then there came a time where he was like, what do you reckon of coming on? And I was quite comfortable in my job. You know what I mean? I had holidays and sick and I got decent enough wage. It was like stable, you know? Yeah. And I was like, nah, it's not really worth it yet, you know? And then it went a little bit longer. We saw each other a lot more. And then I remember my work was going through like changes and people were getting the sack around and I got offered a promotion to take over multiple people's roles. And on paper, you'd go, oh, this was a big move, but the money is never big. You know what I mean? I'm not taking three people's wages, you know?
The responsibility is big, but the wages aren't coming together.
So remember, I got offered it. And then the day I got offered that promotion is the day I quit and rang Sean. I was like, let's do it.
I'm in.
Like, I'm in.
Let's go.
Like, I'm all in, yeah. And then since that day, it's been all in. So I took over with Sean of CrossFit 4178, and that's when we started rebranding to sort of rebuild
to make it
health
rebuild.
And fitness when I sort of took over, yeah.
How challenging was that sort of early stages of running a business, those early years?
Again, my personality is I'm in. Like, I don't have this, even now, like, it's a big risk with the new one that's coming. I don't have this thing in my mind where I'm like, oh, this is the risk. It's not going to pay off. Mm. Like, I have this mindset of I will make this work. Like, I will make it work. So I was in, and the hours that we were working was just ridiculous. You know, ridiculous, but it was all good work to me. Yeah. Like, it was... I own my own business with one of my best friends. Like it was growing. We could see the growth consistently on the way up. Like we just learned as we were going, you know, you started as coaches and we used to coach every session and it was just chaos, but I just loved every...
You love the chaos at the start there.
Yeah, I love chaos. Yeah.
Do you thrive in those?
Oh, mate.
Oh, do. Those high pressure situations.
Yeah. Anything with pressure or anything that's like, big rock. Mm. Like I don't like, this is where me and Sean sort of really align with each other. Like we're complete. He calls me like a pit bull. So it's like, if something needs to be done, he'll just like let me off my leash and I'll
go on.
Oh mate. Yeah. I'll go and do it. Where he likes that day to day sort of grind, the back end work, the systems.
That works perfectly then, doesn't it?
Yeah. Perfectly. So when we had a business coach a few years ago, we had to do these like five voices thing. Don't you figure out like your personalities?
Have you done this, Soph? Oh, have you? Yeah.
So me and Sean did it and we were total opposites. Always. 1 of 5, 5 to 1. Total opposite. And I was like, oh my God, this isn't good.
This is going
to
work out.
And then we went to our business coach. We're like, I don't know. This is, and he's like, this is great. He's like, this will work better than you think it will.
Better than if you guys are similar.
Yeah, similar. Because you're just going to butt heads, right? Mm. I think it's really important in business to just have your roles. Like, you're in charge of this. Mm. And you still work together. It's not just like out of it, but you control this side of things. I will control this side of things.
Yeah.
So if anything's going on with our metrics, like, you're who I'm coming to. I'm who you're coming to. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It works. So yeah, I've loved it. And I've loved it.
Every day.
Yeah, yeah, I've loved it ever since.
So I said at the start of the show that your training philosophy and your approach to training is a lot different to any other gym that I've come across. What was the inspiration and motivation to make that decision, and how did you come up with it? Did you think there was a gap in the market? Did you think there was a sort of an old way of training and sort of this new way needs to be looked at differently?
Yeah, I think there's a few places that do it really well now, but I suppose we came from just a specific CrossFit gym, you know, so it was old school sort of programming, methodologies, really high volume, a lot of intensity, but it wasn't really looking after everyone. You would make some exceptionally fit human beings in CrossFit, but you would leave a trail of broken people behind you, but they don't really get marketed to. So as a whole, you know, even people listening to this podcast now, I say CrossFit, they have an opinion of what that is. And depending on the relationship they've had with it, is if it'll be positive or negative. So when I come in, my background's from a sports science background. I like metrics. I like the periodization of things. I like analytics. So then we just started to mold. And Sean's an extremely good programmer. Like, he's pretty special. So we just started to develop like a little bit of a hybrid between the two. So we really sort of use structured periodized programming for everything that we're doing, be our strength cycles or our conditioning pieces. And we need to make it important that there's actually metrics that we can follow. So, you know, so we started recording everything that we did, like every weight you do, every jump, every run, everything's recorded objectively. So you can actually measure and quantify progress. So to me, there's no point. No, there's no point. There's exercise and there's training. Exercising is amazing. It makes you feel good, gets your heart up, makes you have a sweat. Mm. But it doesn't have a direct purpose for progress. Where training has a direct purpose for progress. Yeah. And most people are motivated by progress. So how do you make them see the progress objectively? Mm. You know, because you'll go through stages of training like we all do, and you subjectively just feel low. Motivation might not be there. You might not be killing it what you feel like. We've had people come to me and go like, I'm just not feeling it. I'm like, hey, let's sit down. And I'll pull up all their metrics for the last 4 months.
Oh,
and I'll go, hey, you may not be feeling great, but objectively, look at these graphs. These, you know, because these things don't lie.
Yeah.
And I think as human beings, we subjectively let the way we feel dictate how we are objectively.
And I think that's so important, because you yourself, you don't see change. I don't know what the stat is, but you don't see change until months.
Nah. It's every day, right? It's like if you're doing a challenge or whatever you want to do, or you're dieting, and you know, you look in the mirror every day. So like you said, it's small, you don't really see it. But the way that you view yourself is huge. Like, I could do it where I've had a great week of training, right? I go home, top off, walk past the mirror and go, looking good, boy. Like, you, boy, good on you. I'll have a few drinks Friday night, wake up Saturday and go, what happened? You are a mess.
You are a pig.
Nothing objectively has changed, bar the way that I'm viewing myself in that thing. So, you know, you have training, which is one aspect of that. And we just wanted to make like a general physical preparedness program and like a sports performance program, but for general population people. That's pretty much it, right? Mm. So like the average age of our member at our gym, I think last year was about 34. So from a group fitness standpoint, you're probably talking a little bit older than the majority, but they're the people that have been around the ringer. They're the people that need the most help. They're the people that are really willing to listen and do what it is. You know, we say we're a gym for busy people, people that have got other shit going on in their lives. Like, training should be something that massively complements people's lives, not take over their lives.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then the training, I think, is one big aspect of what makes us pretty special. But that's one part of it. And then you have to look at the biopsychosocial model of health, where you have your biological, right? You have your social, you have your psychological. It must be all encompassing. And you have to have a look at every single one of these areas, even if you are a gym. Yeah, you're looking after people's fitness, but what's the mindset we're looking at here? How are they viewing? What's their relationship like with food or themselves? And is there a social element to your gym? And It has to be all encompassing.
So is that well, my next question was going to be your gym ethos. Is that some of your core values and what you hope for people to get out of your gym? Is that balanced approach to
It's everything.
Everything.
It's especially me, like personally, that's like my biggest, like I want to help tens of thousands of people create balance. Like I think I have done that extremely well myself. Like I said to you, I think you can still train like a champion, strong, have a good body, have a good mind, still enjoy a beer, you know? Still enjoy foods that you want to do. You can go out for a meal. You can do that. So you just need to teach people how to do that. And especially around food, like from a nutrition standpoint, you know, we live in this sort of world where people are made to feel bad about things that they eat. Like name one time ever in the history of the world where feeling guilty about something has made you better long term. Just doesn't exist. So first thing we'll do is try and eradicate guilt from anything. Oh, mistraining. Fuck. So what? Great. You know what I mean? Oh, I had a bad meal. Right, sound. Has anything happened? No, you'll be all right. Yeah. Go to the gym tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, mate.
So these are the conversations you have with your members.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Like I've got nutrition hubs. Like I said, I think that's why we started the podcast. It was just to give people like, hey,
yeah,
let's just take a step back a little bit. Like we live in this world. Like most people that I deal with are like, I don't know many people that have been out of a state of dieting. They're always in something. They're always in some sort of state of diet. And they're like, and they'll come to me from another diet and they're like, all right, I want to go another. Oh, maybe the last thing you need to do is diet right now. The amount of people that have come to me to pay me money to coach them that I've told them not to do it. Like, what should I do? You should not diet. What do you mean? Just stop everything that you're doing.
Yeah.
Stop tracking. Stop doing anything. Just do. Just try and eat relatively well and just see how you go. And just, you know, try and take this guilt away. And
because are they putting too much pressure on themselves and not actually enjoying?
It's all pressure.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to be better. Everyone wants to look better. Everyone wants to be stronger. Everyone wants these things, but what are they worth? You know, what are they worth? Everyone wants a six-pack. You know, everyone wants to look great. All right, you want a six-pack, great. Are you willing to give up 90% of your life for 10% change in body weight? You might short-term, but once you get there, you realize that it's not that good.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
Nah, like I've been lean enough where I'm like, my stress levels are high. My sex drive's gone. Like, I'm just like, but it's all right because I look ripped.
But it affects everything else.
Everything else. Like, you can be any shape you want and be fit and strong. And, you know, like at my gym, for example, you know, or our gym, should I say, I'm like highly against like challenges. And it's great. If you run challenges at your gym, wonderful. Okay. I think there's different ways that you can do this. But I think if the gym is a place where people go to manage their weight, the gym will always be a punishment. The gym should never be a punishment. This is the problem. The gym should be the most empowering place on planet Earth. Do you know what I mean? Like, the fuck have I got the right to tell some other human what they should or shouldn't look like? Who the fuck are you? Do you know what I mean? And we live in a world where, like, fitness professionals believe that people want to be like them. Don't want to be like you, mate. You suck. No one wants to be like you. Cheer up. You know? You know? Yeah, just try and give people a little bit of their life back and then do things long term and consistently. You know, our average membership length is 2.8 years. It's quite a long time. Industry standard in Brisbane is around 7 months.
Well,
but I always say people don't stay in a place for nearly 3 years on average. If they're not making progress, they're not enjoying training.
How's that process been creating that positive culture and community at your gym and I guess making people feel welcomed and in a safe space? Because I know,
yeah,
you're pretty strict when it comes to negative energy or toxic.
Again, people listening to this think, oh, God, these guys are not.
No.
But we're probably one of the only gyms that I know of in Brisbane that we don't let people trial our gym. You're not allowed to trial our gym. And we refuse memberships from our gym, which is people go, oh, it's great. Culture is really important.
It is, though.
You know,
it really is.
And this isn't malicious, like, hey, you're not coming to my gym. Some people come and they're just like, oh, they just want to exercise. Go and do a boot camp. Nothing against that, but it's going to be a lot cheaper for you to do that, you know? And then sometimes, like, energies just don't match. So we have, like, a big process before you can come in my gym. Do you understand what we're about? Can I generally help you? Do I think I can generally help you? Do you like what I'm selling to you? And then if they do, it's like, right, then we can go in and we make sure that we can look after people as well as possible. So you can't just walk in a door and trial it. Like,
yeah. So what is the process when you sit down with a new member?
Give all my secrets right now, man. So people will usually ring up to like be a member, or they'll email through, and then we will have a call with them, discovery call. That's when I just try and find out a little bit about them, their history, their injuries, what they've done. I start telling them a little bit the process of our programming, our prices, things like that. Because again, that's an important thing in business. Like, can people afford to do it? Not everybody can. And then after that, that's usually when we'll make the decision of like, yeah, let's meet, which is more than the majority, you know. And then after that, we'll then get them into the gym, and then we'll run through like a 45-minute presentation.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
To each member?
Every single person that joins.
Really?
Yeah. Like, no, yeah, this is a huge thing for us.
Yeah.
Because I get to then sit with them for 45 minutes, 40 minutes, depending how much I like to talk, or one of my sales team will do it. And we'll go through everything. So by the time they've finished that, they know exactly what we're about. They know exactly what we're looking for. They know the culture we're looking for. If I've got a really worried mum coming in, for example, that's 37 years old, that hasn't exercised in a while, and is feeling really down on herself, and I go, hey, 60% of our members are female, but 80% of them are parents, and the average age is about 35. They're going to go, why? You know? And then the goal is that mum comes in, for example, like she comes in. I've just gone off topic a little bit. But she comes in, and then she's nervous at the beginning, which it can be overwhelming. And then say her name's Shannon, right? Shannon comes in.
Shout out, Shannon.
Shannon. And then 6 months later, another Shannon is stood at the door.
Yeah.
Nervous. Mum.
Yeah.
Hasn't got any. And then that compassion to be like, hey, I was you 6 months ago. I promise it gets easier. And then people just come in. So it ends up just being a hell of a lot.
Have you seen that happen?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah. Like all the time. So it's a hell of, you know, compassion is a really big thing for me. Like the floor has to have compassion. You know, and compassion isn't just letting people take the easy way out. That's not it. It's being caring enough and kind enough to do it. You know, and then self-compassion sometimes is doing the hard thing in the first place.
Does compassion come easy to you?
Didn't used to. But then I went full circle.
What's that?
I'm too compassionate.
Are you?
Yeah, no one fucking got any fucking results because I was just like, don't worry about it.
It's all good.
Yeah,
everything. No diets.
Yeah. Whatever. Don't
do what you want.
Yeah. So I have gone full circle through like some qualifications where I used to be like hard ass.
Yeah.
Then to this point of like, hey, everything's okay. Which is great to an extent, but you can go so far when you're teaching people that, and they can start to feel really good about themselves, but again, they don't get the result that you promised them that they could get. So again, I like that Brené Brown quote, and if there's anyone listening to my podcast, listen to this, I bring this up all the time.
Bring it up.
But it's like, self-compassion is having a soft heart but a strong back, Brené Brown talks about. So it's like, doing the hard thing is the most compassionate thing. You know what I mean? So I think that's like really important. Like, think of future self. Don't always give you the easy way out. Like, do the hard thing because that's where the result is at the end of the day.
This will come up in a little bit. But from your experience and seeing the change in your members, how important is exercise for your mental health?
I think
we'll go just for your members, and then we'll talk about your...
I think I honestly think mine and my members will sort of coincide with this because again, our values around the business are just the same. So I think training is the epicenter to people's lives. I generally think it is. Like, everything is easier if you are moving your body. Like, everything is easier. Your stress is less. You know what I mean? You're performing better. And I'm genuinely a worse person. Like, genuinely a worse person. Like a fucking idiot, to be honest, if I'm not trained. Worst wife, worst dad, worst business partner. Did I say worst wife?
Yeah, it's all right. We're going to edit that out.
Jesus Christ. Keep it in.
Have you trained today?
Yeah, worst. I did 10K. So, yeah, worst husband, worst everything.
Yeah.
Like, so again, I have like pure belief in that, though. I have pure belief in that. And I've seen it thousands of times, too, to be like, if people train, their life's is easier. It's a stress, and it causes stress on the body, but it allows you to just handle stress a little bit better. I don't know anyone that exercises whose life is worse.
Jordan will look at me sometimes and she'll go, have you been to the gym today? I go, no, not yet. She goes, go to the gym.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I love that our relationships, she can sort of pick up on that, and she'll go do your ice bath, or go jump in the sauna, or go for an exercise, or go for a run, for a swim. So she picks up on that. And as soon as I do it, I go, I am a different person.
Yeah. And again, it's not always exercise. It's doing something for yourself, which I've been quite bad at in the past, but just doing something for yourself is going to be the thing. Mm.
What are some common mistakes that you see people make when they first begin their fitness journey? Is it around nutrition, mindset?
Just all that. I think the majority of people try and change the world.
They're like, too quickly.
I'm in.
Yeah.
How many days a week are you going to train? 6. Yeah. What are you going to eat? Nothing. Like, it's just like chaos. I'm just like, whoa, one thing.
Yeah.
Like, one thing at a time. You know, it's that habit stacking where if you do one thing, you know, if you train, the next meal you eat is usually a little bit better. Your sleep is usually a little bit better. Oh, I've got training in the morning. You're probably going to go to bed a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And then you're going to get up and you're going to train. You know, so it's the knock-on effects. I'm like, just get in. And I think some people are probably pushed too hard into getting lots done. Again, it's they're taking the guilt away from things. I'm going to come 6 days a week. All right. Well, how many days a week you've been training? None.
Yeah.
All right. A couple of things here we'll talk about. One is the fact that you've already put in your mind now that you're going to train 6 days a week. So when you train 5, you're going to feel guilty for not getting the 6th one done. Why don't you say you're going to train 3? And if you get 3 done, you win.
Yeah.
If you get 4 done, amazing. Well done. The other thing, again, you go to the science thing. So there's an adaptive amount of volume that humans have to hit to make the progress that they want. Right? This is individual.
Okay.
I can't even figure this out for my... But we know there's like an MRV, which is a maximal recoverable amount of volume. And that's an amount of volume where you place on your body that it gets too stressed that you can't get adaptation to. So you actually don't make progress during so this time.
Is this overtraining? Is that that?
Well, yeah, I guess it can be. It's just like your body can't recover. So you just get your DOMS and then you push them a little bit more and you're like, no pain, no gain, baby. Like, you gotta go, gotta go. And it's like, oh, that's not really what science says, but okay, you know, you do you.
Yeah, yeah.
Some soreness is great. I'm not saying that it's not great, but walking like John Wayne's not a, not a pleasurable thing.
So do you tell your members, I guess you don't need to tell your members, but what's the optimal time to be going to the gym?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know. Whatever suits their
whatever it is, whatever suits
their lifestyle. Yeah. Like whatever. Again, I think everything to do with health and fitness. This is an interesting point. Is optimal, suboptimal.
Yes.
Both optimal. Mm. But everyone looks for this optimal. Mm. Like, why are we trying to make everything so optimal?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, just suboptimal is wonderful.
Yeah.
Suboptimal for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Adds up.
And that's this next thing. You wasn't too sure if it was you or Sean, but to your Rebuild Health and Fitness Instagram, you guys posted some lessons.
Yeah, well, I think when we had the 10-year stuff, we had a lot of nostalgia.
There's a few that I want to run through with you, and you can sort of explain it.
Yep.
Get a little bit of advice.
All right, I'll bring him in as Sean, because I'm pretty sure he might really so also.
The first one's little by little becomes a lot.
Yeah, something we talk about all the time. Like, you can neglect like just small habits over a long period of time, like add up, like a little by little becomes a lot with everything. Mm. You know, if you train, for example, and this I'll just talk about fitness here, like 3 days a week, but you do that consistently over a long period of time, that adds up. You know, doing the thing, getting up for the work, getting up for the walk, doing the work, like you can't underestimate the power of small daily incremental change. But the problem with it is that people don't like doing it because it's so small. Mm. Journaling takes 2 minutes. People don't want to read for 2 minutes. I'm going to read a chapter a day. Do a page. What's the point?
Yeah.
Well, you know, a page a day, you know, 365, you know, just them things, and they hugely add up.
It's that consistency over intensity, I tell my friends, is
everything.
Yeah, everything.
Consistency trumps intensity.
Yes.
Consistency trumps everything.
Yeah.
Cannot be underestimated, but people devalue small tasks.
Make your health a priority before your health becomes a priority. And this is a big thing that I've sort of preached over this podcast is, I guess, for the probably since last year, the first time that I put my health number one, I used to 5 or 6 down the line, and it was affecting my whole everything, my relationships, my work, my mindset, my health was... it was just diminishing, and for the very first time that I'm putting my health number one, and I'm reaping the rewards from it. Mm. I'm feeling a lot better. My relationships a lot better with not just with my partner, with my friends, with my family. What's your view on that?
I think we've all been sick.
Mm.
you know, you've all had a blocked nose, and then you stop breathing again, and you're like, wowee.
How good's this?
You know, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And you look at people when they get older, and I'm really passionate about this at the moment, because obviously my parents are at a certain stage, and my in-laws are at a certain stage, and I think culturally they just never really exercise like what we do now, and I can see the sort of change, but everyone thinks they've got more time. Mm. I'll be fine. I hate that. Mm. I'll be fine. I don't think you will. You know, the day I die, I tell you what, I'm going to have my health in check. Unless something happens, you know, you could have a stroke, or you could have anything. These things could happen, but your health is everything. There's a book where they asked like people on their deathbed. Did you see that? The same questions.
Yeah.
What was the number one?
There's a guy, I go to the chiropractor once a month when I get back from the mines just to straighten things up. And there's an 84-year-old guy that I see regularly in the waiting room, and fit, like from the neck down, he's 22.
Yeah,
like,
love that.
And I was like, what do you do? Like, what do you do for fitness and stuff? And he goes, I kayak from Mooloolaba to Old Woman Island, which is like Majimba Coolum. And it's fucking far. It is a far kayak. Yeah, yeah. And he does it every day.
Really?
Every single day. And then he's doing a bike tour to Europe where you get on a cycle group and you cycle through countries. 84 years old. And he had to pass, like the tour company was like, oh, can we do some medical stuff just to make sure like it's all good? And he did it, and like, yeah, you're fine, you're good to go. Yeah. And I was like, what's the secret? He goes, don't stop. He goes, don't fucking stop. He goes, people, what's this thing is like people age because they stop doing exercise. People stop doing exercise because they age, but you age because you stop doing exercise.
It's like the same with play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? People get old because... I completely agree with that. I do jiu-jitsu with a guy called Kepler Vessels. He was Australian cricket legend, South Africa cricket legend.
Yeah.
And I was like, why do you... He's got like bionic knees. I'm like, why are you still doing this? He's like, because I'll die if I stop.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he just... He's a boxing coach. He does jiu-jitsu. Like,
oh, wow.
Just like super...
Yeah, yeah.
Inspirational. Like, you know what I mean? I want to be that person. But we are nothing without our health. Like, I've dealt with corporates and CEOs and people that have, on paper, every bit of success. They don't need money. They do not need money. They have everything in their disposal, but they have not got their health.
Yeah.
What's the point of having millions of dollars if you haven't got your health? Mm. You don't know if you'll be there for your family for the rest of your life. Mm. That's a terrifying way to go.
Thought, isn't it?
Terrifying. And again, it's like that, you know. I think we've all been through stages where we've got so busy that we do neglect our health at times, you know. Running businesses, doing pocket, whatever, where you're just like, no, I haven't got time to get...
And it's sad sometimes that there will be a reminder where you do get sick, and you know the universe will give you a reminder how important your health is.
Mm. Injuries.
Injuries, yeah, exactly.
But it's just not... You should never stop. There's no reason to ever stop. Obviously, rest and stuff, but there's always something. There's always something, and it's never too late.
Yeah,
Even if you're 90 years old, you can either be, in 1 year's time, you can be 91 years old, or you can be 91 years old and fair and stronger.
Yeah, well, he's 84 and he goes, there's no excuse. I'm telling you, I've got kids, I've got grandkids, you know, they've all got jobs, I've got jobs, you know, but there's still no excuse for me to do it.
And I think people are busy. So like, you know, I'm not saying that we all have the same time.
Mm.
Do you know, we just don't. People are work full time, they're parents, they're single parents on minimum income and all this stuff. But, you know, something is better than nothing. And, you know, I'll try and preach it. It's for you, but it'll make them better. You know, that's how I look at it. There's always time. Like Parkinson's law is something that I'm really sort of passionate about. Parkinson's law states that the time you give to a task is the time it takes to complete the task. Nice. So say if you have 10 minutes to work out, the majority, including myself, will go, if I've got enough time, well, you could exercise 10 minutes. You know, and that goes back to the first point. Then little by little becomes a lot.
Exactly.
Like some there's always time for something.
Don't be a dick. You never know what battles people are going through.
Definitely sure. I think that's something that has been prevalent over many years, and including myself over this last 12 months, where it's been, you genuinely have no idea what people are going through. Like, you have no idea.
Mm.
Like, who gives you the right to judge anyone? You don't know their stories. You don't know their histories. You don't know anything. And this comes both ways. I'm like, I see people in the gym and goes, oh, she's so lucky she looks like that. Mm. She ain't fucking lucky.
Mm.
That's called work. You don't know what she's been doing in order to get that. But people like to just make their own life a little bit easier. But again, empathy, compassion, really important. And then communication too. If you don't know, you know, instead of just talking about it, go and speak to them. Usually people are quite happy to talk. You know, I think that's really important. But so many people are battling their own things. Like, what gives you the right, you know what I mean, to be a dick? Like, if you can't be anything, be, you know, you can be anything, be kind. I think that's...
Where did that out? Well,
some people just are.
You'll never be successful if you don't experience discomfort.
That's sort of scientific in a way.
Yes.
You know, to build muscle or to build fitness, you know, you need progressive overload. That's increased stress placed on the muscle. There always has to be a point of stress where on the other side of it is progress. Like, I love a person, like, love being uncomfortable. Like, comfortable is when I have issues. Okay. Like, being content is when I have issues. Like, I don't like... And this is not... It's like happiness, right? Happiness isn't constant.
No.
Like, but you have moments of it through the day. And a lot of, like, mental health stuff comes because people believe they should be happy all the time, or they should be comfortable all the time, or they should be content. It's like, no. Like, look for these bits of being uncomfortable. Because I promise you, on the other side of that is progress. Business, life, relationships. The amount of people in... I'm not a relationship psychologist now, by the way. But again, the amount of people in relationships that I know these day and age that will just throw it in a little bit easier because it's getting to this point where it's uncomfortable. Fuck, relationships are uncomfortable, mate. Like, super uncomfortable. Like, you've got to... Requires, like, anything else you want to be successful at requires a lot of...
work.
Yeah. You don't... Successful people are successful for a reason. No one's success has got an easy ride there. Though I think it's funny at the moment, like the Logan Paul, Jake Paul. I talk about them because they're like hit the town. It's like, have you seen what the work they've done over the past like decade? Yeah. Like how much?
I've seen that all the old school stuff.
But even like back in the day when people would do like this, for example, look at this setup, right? You got a producer over there that'll edit all this out and do. This is hard. That's, you know what I mean? It's people like, oh, all you're doing is press and play. No, it's not. No, it's not. This is like, this is graph. Like you have to be.
It's like in it for the long haul, isn't it? Like,
Unless you get to a point where you're happy and you're just like, I'm earning good money and I'm comfortable, wonderful. I wish you all the best with it. But my personality is just like, push it. The gym. Like, I tore my pec at jiu-jitsu, right? So a ruptured pec. And then, like, I'm still exercising, but I'm doing like a lot of single arm stuff. I'll be doing some leg stuff. But I couldn't push to a place where I couldn't hurt. Do you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't hurt.
Yes, I know exactly that.
Yeah, and my stress started to like build. Yeah. So I text the physio. I'm like, wow, I want to see you tomorrow morning. He works for me. I don't have a physio on call. And I'm just like, see you tomorrow. I'm running a half marathon. I'm not a good runner. I'm running a half marathon. He's like, oh, we'll see. I was like, yeah, we will. Yeah. And he's like, you can't run. I was like, okay.
Why can't you run? Oh, because the motion.
The repetition. Yeah, but I am running because to me it was like running is the one thing that I can hurt. Enough. I can physically hurt enough. I'm not good at it.
Because I hate not getting to that point of pain. I hate it.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, just stop here. You've done your reps. Yeah. It's just like, well,
yeah.
No.
That's where the stress is, right? Stress. It's like when you put it, it's like, it's hard. Yeah.
I love it though.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I Jordan laughs at me because we're so different in terms of training. So she goes to train to feel good, enjoy herself, get that little bit of sweat on.
Yeah.
I go to train to vomit. And she'll go
my vomit, but
you know, to that point of like,
yeah,
like I'm walking out of there, like got the head spins and stuff, and she's like, what? I'll get home and I'll lay on like the cold tiles, and I'll be like, you have the fan on me. She's like, why do you do it every time like that? I go, but if I don't do it like that,
it's the other side,
I honestly feel like it's a waste of time, even though it won't be a waste of time. In my head, I'm like, if I don't push it to the absolute limit every time I go, I feel like I'm not. Getting the most out of it.
Again, it's each person's their own. But on that, talk about training, right? I've never been in the middle of training going, fuck, this is fun, man. I'm having a good time. I'm having a good time. How long is the workout? 20 minutes? Make it another 10, like ever in the history of the world, right? No. So I always say like training shouldn't always be fun. It should be fulfilling. Mm. And what that fulfillment looks like to you is different. But you know, when you've put yourself in a shed you know what I mean? And you come out the other side, like, you're fulfilled from that.
Yeah.
And if you do anything less, your personality, you're not going to have that fulfillment. Do you know what I mean? So fulfilling over fun, yes. I think, is important.
That's a good point. Learn to say no. So sort of only putting time and energy to things that serve you.
I'm terrible at this.
Are you bad at saying no?
Yeah, I'm at the Sunshine Coast 10:30 on a Sunday morning.
We were saying this too, like, I walked in here going, why the fuck are we at work on a Sunday?
Yeah, no, I'm only joking, but...
No, you're not.
Again, I am. But again, a good example. And I am bad at saying no, but I am definitely getting better. Mm. Sean's amazing at it.
Is he?
Yeah, yeah, he's sort of really good. And Sean's helped me over the last few years, like... into stuff, like, I go, I'm like everywhere, I'm up and I'm down, and he'll go sometimes like, hey, like, go for a walk. Mm. You know, have you thought about breathing at any point? You know, so he's been really helpful for me over I think that's right, and it serves you in what aspect? Like, we only have so many hours in a day. We have to be protective. So one thing I've got really good at saying no to, which I used to be really bad, was going out drinking.
Oh yeah.
So I was like, 2015 prime example, like, yes, man. All through uni, yes, man. You want to do something? Yeah. My answer was never no. Mm. I was yes the whole time. But again, that gets to a point where it just doesn't serve you anymore. So you have to think about the next thing. Like, what does it do to serve you? But this is, I'm not going to sit here now preaching. Like, I just spoke about rugby. Will you come down and help? Yeah, sure. Yeah. I'm all in, you know.
Does it go back to that thing you were saying that you love being in discomfort? You love having things on.
I like being busy.
You like being busy, yeah.
But this is a really good point. It's the fact that there's in your belief, you believe there is good stress and there is bad stress, yeah. Right? Exercise is a stressor. Good stress is the work I'm doing at the moment, you know? Bad stress might be an argument with a friend or relationship stuff. The body doesn't know the difference between those. Mm. So it's all stress. It all goes in the same bucket. And eventually that bucket will fill and you will fall.
Yeah.
So then you need to do things that you say no because they're not going to serve you within that moment. Because again, it doesn't matter if all your stress is good. We're going to get in this place. Super good work, super stressful work. It doesn't feel like stress, but then I'm crashing, you know? So it's all the same. It's got to be careful with that. So
environment is everything. And I think that you've sort of nailed it with your approach at the gym.
Yeah. Well, environment is absolutely everything. Mm. I think you read the book. I'll keep it brief. So, you know, I think it was the Vietnam War, right? And a lot of the, I think it was like, was it like 60-70% of American soldiers come back like...
More, I think. Yeah. Something more, yeah.
So heroin addicts. So then President Reagan set up some rehab clinics, I believe. So then the American soldiers would come home, go to rehab, and then go back to their families. And what they realized is like 90% of the American soldiers never relapsed. But if you put someone from the street who's a heroin addict into rehab, 90% will relapse. And the point of it is the fact that you're taking someone from the street where they became a heroin addict, rehabbing them, and then putting them back into the same environment and expecting a different result.
Yeah.
Where they were going from Vietnam, they were coming into the rehab centers, then going back to their home lives when they were happy and different people.
Didn't have that temptation. It was like, you weren't going back to Vietnam.
Yeah, that's it.
You're going back to a loving family and 100%. A different society and different culture and stuff. Yeah.
So environment with everything, with your, you know, with your friends, with your family, with your business. Like, I think environment is not, if so, one of the most important things.
It has such a huge influence in what you do in your life,
The way that you communicate, us two sat next to each other now, this is like a nice environment, so it helps, you know what I mean? Like, it just generally helps.
Yeah. Take the time to celebrate your wins, and that's something that I've not been very good at all throughout my life. Yeah. I've always, if I've achieved something, I'll tick it off. And it's on to the next. I've never actually sat and just gone, well done.
Mm-hmm.
Pat yourself on the back. Enjoy it. Soak that moment in. Even if it's a short amount of time, I've never been good at it. Even doing the podcast, like, it's going well. I've never just sat there and gone, I'm actually really proud of myself.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do it. Mm. I read the Resilience Project book when he talks about gratitude, and he talks about one of the kids over in India, and he says this. Mm. And it's like him saying, like, how good's I got shoes on my feet. Like, I've got rice, yeah. You know. And he's brought it back saying, like, when you are in a moment when things are going well, when you've had a little win, it's important to say, he's meant to say this, but he can't say it. So he says this. And it's just like, in a time when that happens, you just take the time out to go, yeah, how good is this?
Yeah. It's difficult.
It's difficult?
Yeah.
You struggle with it?
Yeah, I struggle with it.
Yeah.
Again, another thing that Sean is... I think we all struggle with it because we all sort of get stuck in this rat race.
Busy.
Yeah, you know. I look at people in front of me to where I want to be, and I don't hate on them. You know, I'm you know, amazed by it. I want to do it. If they're ahead of me, they're either doing something better or they've done it for longer. You know, so I look at those people for sort of inspiration. But then when you tick off the next task, then they're still ticking off tasks. So you're like, right, like, let's go.
Yeah.
I like the only time I'll celebrate is when I know it's possible. So let's say we bought a building, like we bought a commercial building. Getting approval for the building was amazing. Like we were like, fucking get in. Like we were like fist pumping. We were amazing. Oh, we were like, boy, this is amazing. We just bought a commercial building. Yeah. Wow. And then when I got the phone call, we were like on it. Like it was constant. We got the phone call saying the building's yours. I was driving. I don't know what I thought, but I thought confetti would fall from the roof of my car. And people were just...
Balloons, yes.
Yeah, everything.
Champagne.
And, yeah, I thought, fucking hell, what's going on here? And I just drove and picked up my kids and then just drove.
Yeah, yeah.
Drove home. So I'm the same. I have these unrelenting standards that I'm just like, the next. But there has been also been times when you do give yourself space enough to do it. Where I've been in, say, our facility on my own, and I've literally just looked around and I'm just like... Like, I love this.
Oh, nice.
Like,
yeah. You've had a time just to soak it in.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
And I try not to underestimate. It's usually when I am alone, though, where I can just...
Take a moment.
Sit and just see what you've built. And even when people, like, I don't like compliments. Like, God, gross. You know? But I like admiration. So I would rather someone speak nicely about me to somebody else than speak nicely to me about me.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like, I think that... No, says that you're doing something right. If someone comes up to me like, oh, I spoke to this person and they've said, I go, wow. That,
means a lot.
Yeah, that means a lot to me. Yeah, admiration means a huge amount. But yeah, I'm definitely the same, trying to get more moments of like, yeah, wow. Again, because we're doing pretty well. Like,
you are. You're doing very well.
Yourself too. Like, you know, as a whole, like my friendship group, you know a lot of them. Like, they're doing...
Yeah, they're nailing it out there. Yeah.
They're doing sort of great stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But...
Apart from Kerwin, I don't know what he does.
Nobody does. Nobody does.
A really good topic that I want to talk about with you is action precedes motivation.
Mm.
And like in my head, I've always gone away from motivation. I've gone for more discipline.
Mm.
If I relied on me feeling like I needed to do something, it would hardly ever happen.
Mm.
Most of the time, I don't feel like jumping in the cold plunge. I don't feel like going to the gym all the time.
Yeah.
But I sort of bring it down to discipline. And that's how I never thought of myself as a disciplined person, but Jordan's said something the other day and she's like, what'd she say to me? She's like, you got to not hold other people to your own standards.
Mm.
And I said, what do you mean? She goes, if someone doesn't want to have the same discipline as you, you've got to accept that and be okay with it. And I was like, do you think I'm disciplined? And she goes, you'll go gym every single day that you're back from the mines. You will have your times you wake up, times you eat.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's just...
But is that just not a habit from you being a child doing that your whole life?
I think so.
You know?
Yeah.
That's just part of who you are, right? And even from a biological standpoint, like if you've got up and you've trained your whole life and you've had times where you've had footy training, you've had to get gym, you've had to eat, you've got to be your word sort of disciplined to do that. That just builds.
Yeah. I've never relied on motivation though.
Nah, motivation.
Because I always like to join. I actually don't feel like doing it.
Yeah, again.
Because why are you doing it for?
It's not fun, is it?
Yeah. And I'm like, but I have to do it.
Yeah.
Like I need to do this rather than like feeling motivated. How do you motivate?
Yeah, I'm the same. I don't really like motivation. I don't.
Oh, you don't?
No. I mean, how many times have, you know, there's three of us in this room now. How many of us have been to sleep and then gone tomorrow morning, fucking 5K is getting nailed, or I'm going to do 100 push-ups when I wake up. You're just like, tomorrow, everyone's going to get a shock. And then I wake up in the morning, you're like, fuck, dreaming. Like, what was I thinking? What was I thinking last night? You know what I mean? But again, that's motivation. So motivation passes. Motivation is never, ever, ever there when you want it to be. So I don't think it can be a reliable factor. If you do get motivation and your running trainer's there, it's like, right, go. Let go when it's there, but it's not going to fall. Action is everything. Discipline is one thing, I think. I haven't got a good relationship with discipline. I think probably just from being a kid, you know what I mean? Like, that sort of drilled into you.
So what do you mean by action?
Action is just doing the thing.
Just doing it.
Just doing the thing.
Not thinking about it.
No, don't think. Just go and do.
Okay.
Just do whatever you need to, right? So I use swimmers as this, right? So swimmers, right? So say if you become a swimmer and you become an amazing swimmer, right? And you go to the Olympics and you win bronze. Still no one's going to fucking know who you are, right? So they're so intrinsically motivated in order to do that, right? Do you reckon any swimmer is getting up at 5 a.m. going, going to go and stare at a line for 2.5 hours up and down a pool? Nah, they're not motivated, but that's the action they need to take to get better.
Yes.
By doing that consistently, they start to get better, right? Now they've got, they're a little bit more inspired because they can see the progress that happens from the action. Do you know what I mean? And then motivation comes from that because they start winning races. Now they're motivated and stuff to go to the next level. So then it's a continuum. So it's like action, inspiration, motivation. It can never be confused and be the other way around.
Yes.
Because even like willpower, for example, willpower isn't infinite. Like we will fold. Do you know what I mean? Like when people are dying, they'll go, no, I'm going to hold off. The next day, I'm going to hold off. Next day, fucking, instead of having a bit of chocolate one day, they just had it. All, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So willpower is just not constant. You only have so much of it. It will run out at that point. But think less. Do the thing that you need to do.
Yes.
You know, I don't get up and are thrilled with anything. I can't remember the last training session I did where I thought, bloody hell, I am pumped for this. Like, I am running in the rain. Yes, please.
But you feel better afterwards.
Always. It's the fulfillment that comes from it. Like, who do I want to see there in an hour's time? You know? And like gyms like mine, for example, it's this sort of path of shared suffering, right? There's a lot of literature on shared suffering too. The military would be a prime example, right? Rugby, prime example. Like, you know, pre-season, you're in the trenches together and you're struggling, but then you look around and you know exactly how that person is feeling. So there's already this bit that's like, you know, and you know if you've gone through a pre-season and you've just worked your ass off, now you're inspired. Now you're feeling good.
Yeah.
But you only feel good by just doing the thing in the first place.
Yeah.
Action, inspiration, motivation.
Love that.
Fuck motivation.
If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. What's your team around you?
Yeah, amazing. I think this comes with growth, and I think we've seen it. I think me and Sean would be the first. Our egos would like to say that we could do it on our own. Well, we couldn't. Like, we're a team. You can't do everything yourself. When you start a gym, right, or you're doing anything, right, the podcast could be anything, right? You start it, you're like, I'm going to do it all. I'm coach every class. I'm going to do every sale. I'm going to do everything because nobody on this earth can do it better than me. I am the best.
Luckily, I've never felt like that.
The best.
I was like, I can't do this without Sophie.
This is it.
I can't. It wouldn't have happened.
So, and then you start going, and then we got told it too. So you'll be like, oh, then you start doing well enough that you can step away from coaching for a day.
Yeah.
And then everyone's like, your gym will fall. And then you step away from 3 days and then one day. And then you're not coaching anymore. And my gym's still getting busier. I'm like, so you're telling me that it wasn't me?
It wasn't me this whole time.
You're telling me there's coaches that can do what I... This is...
Almighty.
Yeah. This is very new to me. Right? So I go and do the marketing side of things. So I'm a marketer. I'm learning how to market. Marketing, I'm like, oh god, I'm killing this. Then I hire a marketing person. Amazing. Fuck, she's better than me. You know what I mean? I hire a salesperson. What, there's more people that can sell? Like, this is just absolutely bonkers to me.
So ego again, is humbled.
Yeah. You create a team. There's only so much you can do. There's people around you that can do your job better than you, which then becomes more billable and financially viable because they're doing that stuff for you. That means you can then concentrate on other stuff. You can't do everything. Producing the podcast. So then you can just concentrate on doing your job properly.
Yes.
Other than that, you've then got, if you weren't, you would then have to go home, put all them cameras onto that, make sure it's recording, get all that edited, making sure the volume's at the same level, make sure the social media stuff...
Do the marketing.
Do the marketing.
Do the socials.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, but then it takes away from you on the job, and it'll probably take away from the love you have of doing it, because then you've got to do everything else. You can just concentrate on what you need to do. So this is a team.
Perfect.
Do you know what I mean? So... Yeah. It's everything. If you think you can do business alone, like, you're wrong. But then it's like relationships and stuff too, right? They have to be there. They have to back you in what you're doing and have that sort of belief. You know, you will go a lot further together. Like, I couldn't do what I do now without Sean. And, I would happily say vice versa.
Yeah. And that's that last one's really important, because having that strong support network, especially at home, it's essential for you to achieve your goals and encourage you in those times of difficulty and stress. And I think it'd be good for us to talk about your relationship with Jess. when did you guys meet? Back in Wales, obviously, I just found out.
Yeah.
Is there a story there?
Liam Handy's New Year's Eve party when we were like 16.
So you've been with Jess since you were 16?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She came on to me, you know.
Did she?
Yeah. She sent texts, you know. Who's that hottie you were with?
That's not true, is it?
It is, yeah. No. Oh, I might be reading between the lines, but that's how I sort of remember.
That's your story.
Yeah. So we've been together since we were 16, properly. Wonderful. She's amazing. Definitely pushes me. Like, I sort of grew up where whatever I did, which is really nice, like whatever I did, I would be the best person ever to my mum and dad. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I could fart through a walkie-talkie and my mum would go, sounds amazing.
Sounds like a symphony.
So, is that you singing? Beautiful. You beautiful. Ever thought about making it? Like,
now I know where this ego's come
from. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But like, whatever I did, as long as I was happy, that was generally their thing. Yeah, if I was happy, if I was working in a shop, working at it, as long as I was happy, it would not matter. I meant my grandma, everything would be the same. I remember my grandma, when things just like click with you, my grandma used to tell me, and I used to be really young, she was like, whatever you do, you'll do well because you're just a good person. And that always sort of stuck with me. When I met Jess, Jess is driven. Like, she's driven. And her parents are driven. Do you know what I mean? Like, but they've sort of drove this into Jess too. You know, hard work. She's really intellectual, like highly academic, like super intelligent. So, like, I'm hoping my kids have her...
Traits.
Yeah. And her family's hairline.
Is that what you're in hand?
They are thick. Oh, mate. Thick. But yeah, super academic, really hard working. And I've sort of been inspired by that. And I guess over time, like just through osmosis, you start to like blend into each other. You know what I mean? Which I've then been driven enough to go, hey, so I will start pushing what I need to do. Which has been really important for me, I think, because if I didn't have a partner like Jess, I wouldn't be as close to being as driven as what I am, like, definitely.
Cool.
But then on the other side of that, I've brought her back down to be, hey.
Well, a little bit more,
you know, like...
Relaxed, fun.
Relax, you know, like, things don't necessarily matter, you know, like, as much. Like, something I like to think about is, like, and it sounds quite, this is going to sound depressing, but, like, worst case. I always go worst case scenario, right?
Yeah.
And I go deep worst case.
I bet you do.
Like, bad. You don't want to know what my worst case is. But most of the time, it ends up with me living back with my mum and dad in Wales. If that's the worst thing that could happen in my life, I'm pretty privileged enough to do that.
Yeah.
I think that's important to remember, to just be like, you know, if you're hating anything, it's like, you can change it. And I also like the fact of humans are, and they may not think they are, but they are powerful enough to change anything in their life. And I mean that in terms of like, I'm married, kids, business. I could just book a flight to Vietnam tomorrow and be done with it all. I wouldn't ever do that, but I could be. I have that power enough to do so. And I think having that, but then staying for the reasons that you actually love it in the first place, go a hell of a long way. But yeah, great relationship with Jess. Yeah, she's beautiful.
What has fatherhood taught you about life and about yourself?
That I'm not as important as...
How many kids you got?
Two. Yeah, I think having children has its challenges, but you wouldn't change anything for the world. Like, my kids, they've made me the angriest I've ever been, like, ever been in my life. My, some of the stuff that...
You're two girls.
I've got a boy and a girl.
Boy and a girl.
So 5-year-old Alfie, he has generally made me angrier than I've ever been. Like, I've heard stuff come out of my mouth where I'm just like, wow. I like a demonic. But I've also never loved
anything more.
Nothing comes close to that feeling. And you would do anything for them. And I suppose this sort of drives you and, you know, to do a little bit better. You want them to see you do better. But at the end of the day, I want them to, I can be as busy as I want to be, but I still want to be able to put them to bed and be there when they wake up and be able to take them to school and do all these things. I want them to be able to talk to me and be open to me and be emotional enough, you know what I mean? And speak to each other and tell you they love it. So you try and teach them the traits of maybe some of the things that you wish maybe you had a little bit more. So you try and do that, but it's also a difficult thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, there has to be rules, I guess, or certain, not disciplines, it sounds bad, but, you know, you can't have your kid growing up thinking that they can do whatever they want either. Do you know what I mean? And so it is hard because you see all these parenting styles and these parenting books and you just like...
There's so much information out there, isn't there?
Like this soft parent. Try and soft parent, Alfie.
Yeah.
Try it. You'll get a backhand.
He'll backhand you.
So Alfie's chaos. He's amazing. Like he's so... When he was a top... Like we had 18 months old, I thought, oh my God, we have struck the gold. What a kid. And then 18 months here and I was like, what the fuck is this? What is this?
This devil.
This is, wow. Here
we're in.
Buckle in, baby. We're going. But amazing. Like watching him play footy and stuff now, like I just love it. I'll do anything for them. But then my daughter, she's just like, God knows where she's come from. She's just angel, like so soft and just so compassionate. Like if you're sick, she'll just do everything. She's like, she's three, right? And she'll, if you're sick, she'll come and she'll give you a teddy or she'll do like she's just, I don't know where this caringness has come from. I don't know. It must just be a natural trait.
Something that I've learnt over the last couple of years is that mental health struggles does not discriminate. It can affect any. When we met up, I had no idea that you were sort of recently going through your own issues with your mental health. Do you want to share?
I don't mind that. Like I think I said to you then, it's quite, when you're in a good place, like it feels like nothing's ever going to happen again. So, when you've been in a dark place, which I'll sort of talk about, but then, you know, I've been to therapy and I've been in a good place. I'm like, I could therapy you. Don't worry. Like I'm fixed. Don't worry about me. I'm sorted. You're like, I'm going to be good forever. And then you're not good over that corner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine's like a year ago. And I've done podcasts and posts and everything about like how privileged I have been to never struggle with mental health issues. Like been fine. Like I've been privileged. I'm like, wow, like how lucky am I? And then 2023 was just chaos, like bad. And you know, you get to a point where you're just like hiding it. And this is the first time, like a lot of people listening to this, this will be very much the first time they've heard anything like it. I think I showed you a post that I was going to post, but I never posted it, which I might still do one day, but I don't know, you know, it's pretty big. And then I just got to a point where it was just really bad, like really bad, to the point where I just broke one day, like just completely broke. And I was like to Jess, just broke, and I was just like, I need help. And she's like, what do you mean help? I was like, I need to go and see someone. Like I knew that it wasn't
okay.
Right? Yeah. Like, I knew that it wasn't good, but I also couldn't put my finger on, like, why it was like that. That was the bit that was difficult.
Defining a reason, because I think you said to me, you're like, you know, I've got a job, I've got a career, I've got a beautiful family.
Yeah.
Like, I've got that, but what is it?
And that was the difficult thing, too, because then you would listen to everything. It's like, you know, this is why I dislike things where they say, like, exercise is medicine. It's like, no, it's not. I get what you're talking about, but it's not. You know, go to me. It's like, oh, people listen to podcasts. Do that. Got one. Exercise. Do that. Read. Good. Have a, you know, are your family? Wonderful. Like my kids are amazing. My wife is amazing. All right. Go and see your friends. Talk. You do that. So what am I supposed to do? I don't know what I'm supposed to do from here because I'm in a pretty bad place right now.
I'm ticking all the boxes.
Ticking all the boxes.
But still.
Yeah. And still nothing. So like I bought that, you know, went and saw the doctor and started going to therapy and trying to work through some.
What came up in therapy?
So there was the big two that came up. I think over time you start to get some consistency in what you're talking about. Belonging was a sort of a big one. I have these like unrelenting standards, which are a big one, and that's that not being able to celebrate. There's always something more, and I get to a point where I, like, even Sean's brought this up with me in the past. He's like, people are, you have to remember your standards are so high, we are only trying to reach for them.
Yeah.
You know, and I was just like, I never necessarily saw that. I was always like, well, that's what has got me to the position that I am. And I was like, what am I supposed to do here? And he's like, well, drop it 5%.
Is it that feeling of being content? Does that scare you?
Yeah, I think content scares me. I don't know where it came from, but it's like, I don't know. You think sometimes people are just going to figure you out. You know what I mean? Like, it's all going to come crashing down and you're going to be nothing. And the other one was, like, I wouldn't do stuff if I knew it would affect other people. So I would just put myself way back.
Last.
Yeah. Mm. If I knew that it may affect anyone or it may affect work. So I would always be there for other people as much as possible. And I think I started to take work home a lot more at this point. Yep. Like, I'd never done that. I had this sort of clear balance between what work was and what home life was. And I started to take people's problems home. And I think that's because it wasn't as busy at the time, you know, so it was something. But then you start to become resentful because nobody's there for you. Like, I'm the guy that everybody goes to. You know, like my friends, I'll be the guy that everyone goes to. My mates in Wales, they'll come to me. Mm. But James, he's always got his shit together. Mm. Like I said, and that was the hardest thing, like I spoke about a minute ago. It's like, I have a good life. And I think some people try and put problems to stuff. It's like, oh, it must be his relationship. No, it's not. Mm. You know, it must be something. No, it's not. Like, and then it sort of got to a point where it's like, well, what gives you the right? And this was a hard thing, right? This, what gives you the right to be in the position you're in? What's to make you feel bad? You have everything. Mm. You have no right. And I'm like, I know I don't have a right, but that's why I feel so bad, to the point where, you know, you would just, I don't know if you've been through it, like, I would just wake up and I would just be, sometimes I would be like anxious enough that I would just be throwing up, like physically just throwing up, like time after time. Just,
I would wake up and I know it would be a bad day.
The moment
I'm like, fuck, I'm in a mood. This is going to be a shit day.
Yeah.
And then it is for the rest of the day. And I'm like, fuck, why was it? What? And the next day I wake up and I'll be okay. And I'm like, well, why did I just waste that day? Yeah. What made that day different?
I can't agree more. Mm. That's. I remember I was lying in bed once with Jess and I was quite new into it, I guess. Mm. New into it, like it's something. And I remember Jess saying to me, it made me super emotional. She was like, it's nice to have you back.
Yeah.
Because I was good. I was happy, you know, it's like, it's so nice to have you back. And I was like, wow. Like,
it really hits you too. I've had my parents say that to me.
Yeah. And then woke up the next morning.
Yeah.
Gone. Yeah. Like, I was just gone. I was just gone again. So the anxiety stuff was a bit weird because, again, I wasn't anxious about something. It's like, I got the feeling of anxiety over the thought of it, you know, and then you take Valium or whatever and fucking Bob's your uncle. Like, you're just like, wow, what an amazing thing.
I don't condone this, but how good's Valium?
Yeah. Like, it will change your state and not even like make you like, I thought the first time I took it, I thought I'd be like gone, you know, with the world, like you were gone. And it's not, it just takes everything away. I don't know what it is, but you can see why people get addicted to it. But you're lucky I didn't deal with anxiety too much. I just had these huge moments of it. So like I've probably only ever took like 5 Valium in my life, sort of thing. But why I've took them has been pretty big. But then you'd have the low side of things.
So where are you now with that?
I'm feeling pretty good.
Is it still consistent? Is it?
Yeah, I'm consistently up. Like, I'm consistently a lot better. I think one thing I really struggled with, and I spoke to you about it when we met, was the fact that I felt like I'd just worked myself out of a job.
Yeah.
Because we had this other gym that sort of fell through. So I hired people enough. So I didn't coach. I had a marketing person. I had a salesperson. So the gym didn't really need me at this point. So my driving focus and purpose didn't need me.
Mm. It's like almost that loss of identity and purpose is like, well, what am I?
Yeah, for sure.
I've just built this.
For sure.
And now I'm not needed.
No.
You know?
Yeah, I'm not. And that was a huge a huge part of it. Right now, obviously, I've got a lot of focuses into to other things, and I hope, because my I haven't even ever told my mum or dad about this, because
why is that?
They've been through the ringer a little bit, like the last sort of 12, 18 months.
With their own health.
Yeah, and like my granddad passing away and a few other things, like with my family. And like I said, I'm the one that has it together, and I don't want to put more stress on other people. Like I would if the time was right, but I don't want to put too much stress on other people, so I'd just keep it to myself. And I remember I text, you know, got to the point where it's like, right, I'm going to text my rugby mates, for example, like the, just the close group, and just said, hey, you know,
this is what's going
on.
Yeah.
I am struggling about it. And I had a couple of mates, and I had Jess, and I spoke to a couple of friends and a couple of people at the gym. So it was like people were.
You let people know, yeah.
Yeah, I let people know, you know, and then, you know, it starts to sort of change things a little bit. And I think talking about things does help. You know, you're, at the beginning, I'm like, nah, it won't help. Mm. But it generally
does.
It generally does.
Yeah.
It generally does help. It got to the point where it's just so bad. You know, I remember just like being in my car sometimes and I would just burst out crying. I'm just like, what are you doing? And it's just, you cannot stop. You don't even know where it's coming from. You're just so low.
Yeah.
Where you just like, you don't know what to do next. Like you don't know where to go. Your emotions are just so high. You have no control of them. Mm-hmm. Like you have no control over yourself. And that's the terrifying.
Scary thing.
Yeah. That's terrifying. Bit so again, went to the doctor, spoke in depth, went to therapy again, spoke in depth, still sort of working through. I think I'll stay in. I haven't been for a little while now because I feel like I've honestly been pretty good, but that's definitely something I'll go back to, and I'll probably tend to go for a month, probably every month for the rest of my life, because I do think that's just worth sometimes just getting that
it
chat.
Is it's good,
but at the same time I think you've got to be really privileged to be getting therapy. I think that's probably one of the issues. Like it isn't cheap.
No.
You know, even with like a mental health plan, you're still probably talking $160. Mm-hmm. And I was going once every 2 weeks. Yeah, I'm lucky I'm in the position that I can and
afford
do that
to get help.
Because exactly. I know a hell of a lot of people that can't do that. And that's sort of a real shame. They've got to sort of find that gap between the two. And the UK is terrible for it, the amount of people that sort of committing suicide. I had a good friend commit suicide a few months ago. That was what that post was sort of about.
Yeah.
And he said little bits but didn't say too much. And, you know, and then at the end of it, he was gone. And then, you know, that was what my thing was about. Like if he spoke more or he got medicated and stuff, like it
could have helped.
It really could have helped because, you know, the medication side of things, I think people think it's forever and it's the end of. It's like, it's not. It can just give you that break that you need to just
start that healing journey.
Just start and just bring things down to where they need to be. But yeah, right now I'm feeling pretty good. I've got heaps to focus on. I feel happy. But again, it's also going to therapy and then working through the things. There's no point going there and then not having tough conversations. Yeah. Like not doing the thing that you're told to do. Like it requires, same as anything else, it requires like heaps of work. Like
discomfort.
Deep work. Heaps of discomfort. So you have to then speak to the people that need to be spoken to get you into that better position. And usually people are pretty, you know, are pretty good with it. But and it's also clear, like I think I thought I was hiding it very well, but then people that know you, they're like, oh, well,
something's up.
You're not too.
Yeah, all my friends.
Not crash art, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, well.
But it's different to talk about now that I'm in
a better space.
A better space. Like, it's, but like I said, tough. 2023 can disappear.
If, if one of your mates came to you and knowing what you've sort of gone through, what advice could you give to them?
I would generally just say, I'm like, go and get help.
Yeah.
Like after therapy, I've advised only a couple of people to go. Mm. Like you're not going to lose anything by going, at least sort of talk to people. One thing that I thought about, and Jess made this really good point, and I was for it too, like I probably used to think like it, like you would text people and maybe tell them and they're like, ring me or call me anytime. I don't think you can do that as a friend, because you're putting the onus back on the person to get in touch with you when they're feeling low.
And it's such a vulnerable thing, asking for help.
Horrible.
Offering help
yeah.
is such an easy thing.
Yeah, just hey. Just checking in, how you doing? And we all get caught up. I'm terrible for it. Like we all get hugely caught up, but if you can just check in, with people now and again, I think it's
yeah.
it's really important because you really don't know. I remember like running a rugby match last year that made us go through the finals, right? So it was really important. I remember the club going, like, I remember just being like less than 1% of me, not even 1% of me was happy about it. Like, I literally just couldn't care. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was just like, oh, fucking, what fucking point is this? Like, yeah. What is it?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Talk. That's, it sounds simple, right? But talk, like, generally just talk. Like, let people know. Like, you won't be judged. That's probably one thing. Like, no one will judge you because people don't fake mental health stuff, you know?
Yeah, no one will look at you any differently. If anything, they would commend you for speaking up.
For sure. And again, a lot of my mates, like, they are blokes, you know? They are you know, blokes, but every single one of them just amazing. And then even me going forward, because I've dealt with so many people that have mental health issues, like so many people that have mental health issues, and I've never really... I've tried to empathize, but empathy is understanding what the other person is going through or believing you understand what the other person is going through. And it's really hard to empathize when you...
It really is.
When you don't. Mm. So just to have that... I think being kind and compassionate is always important, but now just to have that, the other side to go like, wow, like, if you're going through that, but you're still doing this, like, really important. Another big thing with me was, like, Sean would be like, I would just be, you know, making sure I'm still ticking those boxes, like, all the time. How, like, training was still... Training might not have been my best,
but it was still there.
It was still, it was like, just keep those habits going, you know, like eat well, go for a walk. I found myself going on loads. I found water. Like I just found myself, I'd find water every day and I would just sit and stare at water. Like I've just found water, like just a nice,
really relaxing,
just a nice thing to look at.
Reminds you of Wales.
Yeah, that's it. And look up at the sun. God, this is revolting. So I'd say, and then just stick to your habits as best as possible. It might not be 100%, but if you go to footy, then keep going to footy. If you're training,
keep that routine.
Keep that routine, because it will, same as everything, it will end. Like everything will end. Like there is another side to how you are going to feel. Like even people that take their life, like, it's sort of like you can completely understand why they have done it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's got so much that they felt like that is the only way out. And there's times where you would have complete feel so alone. They've got 100 fucking people around you telling you that you love you, and you could still feel the loneliest person on planet Earth.
Yeah.
That no one cares. Like, you got someone going, I love you, and I'm like, you could be like, nobody cares.
Mm. Mm.
And it's just like, holy, like, it's so big. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's such a profound thing to go through. And I, you know, you don't wish it upon
anyone.
Is generally the worst thing on planet Earth. But again, it really just does not, does not discriminate whatsoever. Like, you can be any situation, any wealth, any health. If it's time, then it's time.
Yeah. I love that. 5 quick fire questions.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, okay.
Quick fire.
Nothing's quick fire with me. Are we looking for like one word answers or are we looking for like sentences? Because how long you booked this studio out for?
Yeah, 90 minutes.
Nothing is quick fire.
Hopefully before midday. What is your perspective on failure and how do you use it as a tool for success?
I'm not great with failure. Like
You hate it.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of it. I will fail though. Like I know that you need to fail in order to be successful. So I'm trying to adapt to just knowing that you have to lose. Like you have to lose in order to get better at anything. Jiu-jitsu is a prime example. You go in there thinking that you're going to win constantly.
You go to sleep.
You're going to suck. Like you have to get used to losing if you want to be good at anything.
Yes. Love that. How have you defined your success? I'm sort of looking towards maybe your business.
Define success.
Yeah. How have you defined success? How do you know when you're successful?
But just wanting to go into work.
Okay.
I think that's really good. Like I generally just look forward to going into work.
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah.
What are your 3 non-negotiables for living a healthy and full life? Just 3.
Everything's negotiable. Training. Train like you must train. Non-negotiables. It's tough. I don't know. What are yours?
Mine would be definitely my training. would be 100% non-negotiables. My thing would be my environments, the people that I'm hanging around is massive for me, seeing family and friends. And then also having something driving, like a driving force, like a purpose. So I felt very lost before starting the podcast.
Mm.
I just didn't know. I was going out to the mines, but I was just like floating through time, just going, what am I actually, what am I doing? Like, what have I know I've got something to offer.
Mm.
I know I can provide something. I know that I could have a passion or a love for something. I just didn't know what it was.
Mm.
So it's waking up every time I come back to the coast, I'm like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait
to
do this. And that makes me feel alive. Like when I get in here, this is similar to like playing rugby for me. I'm like really nervous, really excited, but I feel like fulfilled, like what you were talking about before. I feel really fulfilled.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, so that's mine.
Yeah, they're mine.
Did I give you a bit of time? They're mine. You piece of shit.
Yeah, they're good ones. Yeah, training, them ones, they were good.
If you could go back to a time in your life, where would you go and why?
I should say something that was that my wife and kids will like.
2015 East season.
Yeah, I'd go further back. I'd go back to my first year in uni.
First year in uni? Fuck, was it fun?
What a time. Yeah. What a time.
So you know what your thing is. You're doing your thing. You're doing your fitness.
Yep.
What advice could you give to someone who's struggling to find what their thing is?
Again, people talk about passion, right? Like find a passion and follow it.
Mm.
I think you heard of Ikigai? It's like a Japanese proverb.
I have, yeah.
Where it's like four things. I wish I'd write this down. Where it's like what you're good at, what can help the world, what you can be paid for. Do you know what I mean? And then like if you can match those things up, that's really important. So some people can have a job that they might hate, but it might be really helpful to someone and they can earn good money for it. Mm-hmm. Or they might have something that, you know, the world need it and they love it and they're really good at it, but they don't get paid so much. It's like just work on those things. But find your thing, especially this day and age. You can literally make money doing whatever you want.
So many options.
Whatever you want.
Is that also a bad thing because you have so much?
I don't necessarily think, you know. You got gamers that are making a fortune now because they're gaming. I can go for it.
Yeah.
Like, you TikTok, like my kids watch stuff on YouTube about, and it's just like old men building Lego, and my kids, and they probably make millions of dollars. Have you ever seen Blippi? You ever heard of Blippi? No. Fuck.
It's almost like that curse of having... You've got so much to choose from.
Yeah.
It's almost a curse having so much.
It is. But find the thing and then just work on the thing. Like so many people are like, oh, I'm so passionate about health and fitness. Are you? Because you don't stay in it very long. Like you need to be in, if you want to be good at anything, you need to be in it for a long time. You know, season two, this will be better than season one.
Yes.
Season five is going to be better than season two. Do you know what I mean? The longer you do something, the better you come. The harder you train, the luckier you get. It's amazing.
I love that.
It's, you know?
Yeah. And just to finish off... This is your quote that I want to finish off with. On those tough days when it feels like you don't want to face the world, fight to keep showing up. Some way, somewhere, somehow, show up. Find the strength in asking for help. If the struggle persists, reach out for support. We're all in this together.
That's nice, isn't it?
It's from you.
Yeah, I know. I remember writing that.
You remember writing that?
Yeah.
I love that.
That was like my semi let people know that.
Yeah.
I'm not 100%, but that was like, I didn't want to give too much away.
Yeah. I love that.
No, that's good.
So I've got a closing tradition of the podcast. Are you familiar with it?
No.
So I get loved ones, family, friends, they send in questions for the guests.
What, my family and friends?
Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah, right. I don't even...
So speaking of fucking Kerwin. He's funny, right? Where is he? He goes, how was your experience moving to a new country and adapting to a different culture without friends or family?
Sort of discussed before.
It was fucking easy for you, wasn't it?
But culturally, really. Because like, you know, Korean, you know, people like Korean, like there's not many Polynesian people in there in the UK.
So yeah.
That, you know, I think Australia and the UK is, but just not where I was. It's so like multicultural. Like I'm fascinated by other people, like other people's ways of doing things. Like Kerwin, oh, love him to death, but have you ever walked around the shopping center with him? Oh my God.
What's he like?
It's just, you know, the like Fiji time. Yeah. It's like you've got nowhere to be.
Yeah, it's just
if you,
strolling.
If you go to like the McDonald's with him, he'll pretend he's never been. So he's like looking at the menu. It's like, you've been here 6,000 times.
I know you've been here.
Yeah. And he'll like look and he'll start asking people like, oh, have you got any specials on today? It's like, it just automatic. Everything's like, I'm just like, quick, man. Let's go. Let's go.
This is from Sean.
Carol.
Oh. Business partner.
Yeah.
Friend.
Yeah.
Hey, mate. So you're often referred to as the weakest link at Rebuild. What would you say is a trait of yours that others may consider a weakness, but you consider a strength?
They consider you the weakest link.
It's so bullshit. I consider a weakness, but others consider a strength. Mm. I don't know. What do I consider? There's a couple of things that I believe are a weakness in my sort of trait. I can be ruthless. Mm. Like I can take the energy of a room depending on where I'm at, which I think is a bit of a fault. It's definitely something I'm trying to work on. Like if I'm up, everyone can come up. If I'm at a different stage, like I can make that happen as well. I don't know what other people would feel a strength. You'd probably better asking Sean there.
Should we get him on the phone?
Yeah.
Just call him.
But yeah, you know, I'm a very straight talking. I don't be around the bush too much when things need to get
said.
When things need to, to get said, which I can probably be a little bit better at that. But again, that's just people I work with and people I'm close with. I think something that I do sort of well is I have the ability to change, again, personality depending on who I'm talking to, I think, at that given moment and give that person what they need within that moment.
I love that.
Good question.
From your wife.
Yeah, right.
Jess.
Good God.
If you never moved to Australia and stayed in Wales, where do you think you'll be now?
You know what? When I went through that and I used to sit at the water, I used to think about this constantly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I used to think about what if. Like, what if.
The what if game.
What if? What would happen? And I think, like, you have parts where you do move away and you're like, what happened if I moved home? Mm. Like, what would I be? Mm. But I try not to think on it too much, to be honest, because would I still be with Jess? I don't know. I wouldn't have Alfie and Hallie, you know?
You wouldn't have the life you love.
I couldn't have the life I live. So I have no idea what I would be doing. I'd like to say that it's something very similar to what I'm...
You wouldn't be so tanned.
What I'm doing now. But I honestly have no idea, and I think that will always be a question that I'll ask myself.
That's nice.
But I'll always keep just doing what I'm doing.
So I've got one more. His name's Tom Clark.
How the fuck did you find him? Oh, you know, have you met Tom? Have you met Tom?
No. And he goes, what stands between you and the simple yet rare feeling of complete happiness?
You should have given me a warning about this. Does Tom, how did you get in touch with Tom?
Don't you worry.
Jesus Christ. Tom's a tank.
He's a unit, eh?
Mate. Yeah. He's one. But you know when everyone's like, they know tough kids when they're school? Like,
is he tough?
Mate, I've never.
Toughest.
No, yeah. Like in,
really?
Yeah. Like ex-Marine, used to go and fight Somalian pirates. Then he was like an MMA champion in the UK. He's like black belt in jiu-jitsu.
Really?
Yeah. He's a twin as well.
There's two of them.
Yeah. Both black belts. Like honestly, will crush your soul, you know, in a bit. But yeah, what a bloke. You'd rather have him on your team.
Yeah.
What a bloke.
Good question for you.
What stands in between me and happiness?
Well, yeah, what stands in between you and the simple yet rare feeling of complete happiness?
I don't think anything stands in the way. Like I do have moments of happiness. Like I will try and celebrate those moments of happiness. Again, like I said before, I don't think living in a constant state of happiness is good for you. I think if you have purpose every day, you love the people that you live with, you love the people that you work with, I think that's enough. More holidays, I don't know. More money, more gyms, more problems. God, they were like super deep questions. That was nice.
I've got a good research team behind me, so
yeah.
Shout out Tom.
Tom Clark. If you found him, you would just go onto all my posts, and then the person that abuses me the most would probably just be
Tom.
Yeah, suck less. Like come second at jiu-jitsu comp, suck less. Well, you get a purple.
Well, one day you'll be able to fight him. Yes. You'll have a little wrestle with him.
Nah, I've tried.
Have you?
Yeah. And I'm a purple belt now. And I'd like to think that if I went home, I'd be... Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just levels to the stuff.
thanks for joining me today, James.
No, thanks, mate.
it's been good.
No, it's good. I'm really proud of what you've done.
Oh, thanks, you know, mate. I appreciate it.
Knowing you back then and obviously not being too connected for a while, I think, listening to the podcast, I know a few of the boys do, like Greggy got me onto it.
Yeah.
Like some pretty unique and special episodes back there, it allows you to definitely... they're definitely thought-provoking at times, and I think just the willingness of people to talk as well in this situation is something, and that's because you do your job well, to be honest, because it's not easy to make people speak about things, even like what I've just spoke about. You bastard.
But that's the thing. It's like it's breaking down those walls, especially with men. Like I find with women, they're a little bit more forthcoming with it, depending, but with men, I think it's like that. Breaking that barrier down, and you're not going to get judged, or no one's going to laugh at you, or no one's going to think you're a weirdo, or anything of those sort of afterthoughts that you think about it. So, it's been great.
Yeah, I think you just put yourself as like a leadership, so you tend to just think that you must stay there. Mm. But actually, just by being a bit more vulnerable, like people will lean into you.
Do you struggle being vulnerable?
Oh, like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it get easier? Has it gotten easier?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. The more you lean into it.
Yeah, definitely. Vulnerability is not... something that's there for me at all, just from even growing up, I think. But it's definitely something, not that I'm just getting better at, it's just something that generally helps.
Yeah, cool.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Jimmy.
No one calls me Jimmy.
I know.